Blog Talk Radio.
Cindy Samson-Brack, author of Grant Me a Higher Love and Why Good People Can't Leave Bad Relationships. I'm a woman on a mission, and that mission is to have you and everyone else to have the best love life possible in this new millennium. But before this can happen, you're going to have to learn a few new tricks. Joining me tonight, as always, is my co-host and producer, Nicole. Nicole's a beautiful young woman, a writer, an entrepreneur, and a lesbian, not necessarily in that order, and she's here to share her love stories and war stories with us. She's the voice that will make all of us women stop blaming everything on the opposite sex, since Nicole knows women are making some of the same kinds of mistakes in their relationships with each other. Well, hello, Nicole. How's my favorite girl tonight?
I am well, Cindy. How are you?
Good. I'm very excited that next week we have our special guest.
Yes, we
And you
do.
Might want to, once again, tell us a little bit about her. And I think you were mentioning she has a special event, too, so maybe you could talk about that also, because I think it's something I'm supposed to know about. And you know,
Yes, actually, it's something that you were invited to, actually.
Oh.
She has an event. Yes, she has a special event on October 20th, and I'll have to get you the details. It is invitation only, and she would love it if you would attend, Cindy. So my job tonight was to make sure that you got that that memo that you have been invited to this if you are going to be around. I will have Lisa get me over all of the information and send it to you via your email, and you can check that out.
Okay, and I know right offhand that and that's a Thursday night anyway, and you know that. It's a Thursday
mm-hmm.
night.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That night, I was going to have us take off from the show because I'm taking a little vacation that week, so I'm not going to be available. That's my vacation week. So isn't it funny how she should plan this great event? And is it like, what kind of event is it? Do you have any idea about it?
I didn't get all of the details. All I know was that, that she was throwing it. And earlier today when I had sent over some stuff about you so that she can do some promotion for next week, for having her on, she had said, by the way, I am having this event and I would like you and Cindy to attend if you could. It's, she's inviting maybe only 50 people and we were two of the 50 that she has invited to this thing, just because she said that she would love it if we could make it down there. So,
Well, you'll definitely be able to make it because we won't be having a radio show that night. So,
well, funny then.
Now, isn't that funny?
Yes. And are you excited for next week?
And, yes, I think it's going to be a very exciting show because it's a little bit about mm-hmm. a dating, what a matchmaker is, how to meet people, and some of the mistakes that people do when they go out in that dating world. And, boy, people make a lot of mistakes when they get out there in the dating world.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, and actually just to kind of recap our listeners out there, because I know that, some people – weren't listening last week, but just so that everybody is aware, again, next week we are going to have a special guest. Her name is Maureen Tara Nelson, and she is the owner of MTN Matchmaking. And, this is a very, very organic company. This is not like a Match.com or like an eHarmony, sort of thing where you plug yourself into the search engine and some computer makes these matches. What Maureen actually does is she interviews people and she provides dating coaching, and she does not make matches on aesthetics alone. She makes matches based on overall compatibility. So if she sees that you're one type of personality and that you would not go well with somebody of a like personality, one of your dating mistakes could be that you're looking for somebody like you and that's just not compatible to have a long-term relationship with, and that maybe you need to think outside of that box. And she's been doing this for some time now, and she's very, very good at what she does. She has, over 10, maybe even close to 20 years experience, if memory serves. So we're going to have the benefit of her during our show next week, where our callers can call us. You know, we're going to dedicate that show to love. I know that we often do shows where we focus on a lot of different things, but that particular show is going to be dedicated to love questions and to dating questions. And in addition to that, maybe towards the end of that, maybe we could even pull some cards on her, Cindy, because I know that she was very interested in that too. So we may, you know, she may be interested in doing a live reading, you know,
oh,
for even her.
Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. So I think that it'll be great, you know, to have her on there. And, you know, and if, of course, if we have time, we'll be more than happy to pick up other kinds of calls and everything else there. But, you know, we're going to try to keep it fully about love next week.
And so funny because I always, you know, wanted to meet her because she seems like a very fascinating woman. And funny that you should get this little connection that we could,
mm-hmm.
you know, actually do this. So I think it's great. And, you know, we oftentimes, you know, need to sort of step back and go back to, like, why did this show begin in the first place? Why did we start doing this in the first place? We started to do
mm-hmm.
it because of Grant Me a Higher Love, because
mm-hmm.
We also, you know, wanted to really get that philosophy out there. And,
yep.
You know, and then as time emerged over the 8 years that we've been doing this, you know,
mm-hmm.
we got a little more into doing the mediumship on the show, and we got
yeah.
a little more into dealing with, you know, if you want to manifest a higher love, you have to deal with why you can't get out of a bad relationship.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
it's sort of gone full cycle. And in the 8 years we've been doing it, you know, people meeting in ways that are not just like bar hopping or meeting each other,
mm-hmm.
going about your life has changed. And it's really become a world of dating sites and Tinder. And so this, you
mm-hmm.
know, matchmaking is interesting because a lot of our clients are a little bit fed up with the whole, you know, match.com thing.
Yeah.
And this is a different alternative, a different route for them. So that's what I find really fascinating. That
one of the things that that's also another one of the things that I love about what Maureen does is that, you know, of course it's not going to be like, yes, I'm going to pay $9 a month and I'm going to find the person of my dreams. You know, you get what you pay for here, but you know, it's really, really more, you know, geared towards organically putting people in the same room and seeing if they are compatible on the most basic levels. And part of what she does is she holds events. You know, she does something that I believe it's called Events with Friends, and that's a separate program. And it's literally singles events that she organizes all over the place where, you know, her clients, you know, can come out and where they can mingle and they can take their chances. And it's something that is, you know, geared, you know, less towards let me interview you and see who you're compatible with and more of, okay, let's get out there now. Let's socialize out there. It brings a bunch of people into a public place for a specific event, and other people that are not within the programs are invited there so that you guys can actually have an actual conversation with a real person without having to rely on texting and this and that. And I find it funny that she's got a no texting rule. You know, if she matches you with somebody, she says, no, you talk on the phone, you do not text until after you meet. You know, and that's the end of the story. She doesn't want any of that stuff because things get misconstrued and tones change in text messages. And, you know, when you don't know somebody and you have high hopes for things, you could be reading things into those messages that are not really there, you know, and she doesn't want that. She wants old school. She wants to hand select a match, and she really, really wants you, like I said, at a basic level to see where the compatibility is. Text messaging and a lot of this technology, it gets in the way of that level of intimacy.
Oh, it absolutely does, and that's what I think is going to be fascinating about that show, because she does, you know, give us those hints, and you know, I'm always telling people nobody should be, you know, texting as a main form of communication. As a matter of fact, it doesn't always work. I'll give you an example. Last night, as my husband's waiting to talk to us, you know, he had asked me, you know, what's for dinner? He was out, and I had answered it. I'd made dinner or whatever on his message, and everything got all haywired because he never got my messages. And, you know, we had to figure out that the messages went to another one of his electronic devices but didn't go to his phone. And so can you see how that's just one example how you might think you've sent somebody a text and it looks like it's delivered because it did get delivered somewhere, but maybe not to you know, an electronic device somebody's looking at, and they could think you didn't answer them, you didn't respond to them. So,
yep.
Texting can, you know, it's not 1,000% reliable way of communicating.
No, it is.
You know, we always call it, you know, TJ's expression, the textual abuse. It does get, like, kind of abusive when people are having an argument via text. So I'm certainly not a huge fan of text.
I think it causes more arguments.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, my philosophy on texting is it's for, like, you know, I'm running late or a quick question, or you can, of course, say, I love you, I miss you, kind of nice, sweet little love. If it's a loving, sweet message, that's great. But if it's an argument, you know, that should be, you know, wait till you see each other, you know.
Yeah.
And don't blow it up, because people do tend to write, I mean, some really nasty stuff. I have clients showing me the text messages that they get all the time from their husbands or lovers, and boy, are they nasty. I can't believe they put it in writing. It's like, what, are you crazy?
I think why they can get nasty, though. Because here's the thing, when you, when you are in a relationship and you are having issues, okay, and you're having a fight with somebody, when you have to be in the same room with them and you have to look at their face, when you have to hear their voice, when you have to have that contact, that personal contact with them, you will filter, because you just don't say certain things out loud, okay, most times. But when you are on a text message, it is cold. It is you alone, you know, festering your anger and in your rage, and therefore, because you're not really thinking of the other person on the other end, you're thinking about yourself, because that's what you're immersed in right at that moment, and you are able to say some very, very cruel things that you can't take back. And a lot of that is because that personal thing is gone, that personal attachment, it's gone. You know, it's like arguing with yourself in a room. If there's nobody in there to counter or react to you, what's going to happen? Instead of their reactions diffusing things, it's just going to fester and it's going to escalate your anger, you know? So I think that texting is a horrible, horrible way to fight with somebody because of how impersonal it is, regardless of what the topic is. The topic is not what's personal or impersonal. It's the actual level of communication that you have that's impersonal.
Exactly. Now, we don't have many people that want to talk yet today, so we're going to pick up TJ and we can have a conversation with TJ, and then we can pick up on some other topics about dating and relationships tonight so that we can even prepare for our big show next week. So let me just see what TJ might have to say. Hello, TJ. You're live and on the air.
Hello, dear.
How's it going out there in the beach?
I'll see you at 9:30 and all that. I can't wait for raviolis. But the thing about your texting is that when the phone, like, self-corrects stuff, it puts other words in, and then you text it, and then there's no way coming back. Like, you might say, I love you, and instead it'll say, I envy, you know, life or something like that. You know, what? You know, so anyway, there's nothing better than having the real person right in front of you, and you look in the big, beautiful blue eyes and say, I love you. And I wish I was there to say that to you, so have a good show. I'm out in the boat. We went all the way around Shelter Island. We're coming into the harbor. It's getting dark. So I love you, and I'll see you at 9:30. Hello?
Hello.
TJ,
yeah.
TJ, did you see any four-headed turtles while you were out by Shelter Island?
No, I didn't. Nicole, how are you? I love the job you've been doing helping Cindy. God bless you. I haven't seen you since your wedding. We definitely have to go out for a cocktail once before the holiday season.
Anniversary. Are you really telling me that it's been almost a year since I've seen you? That's terrible.
That's exactly it.
Yes. And you came to our wedding. So, like, that's the only time we seem to socialize. All right, listen, ladies. Go have your show, all righty? Okay.
Bye.
Ciao for now. Bye-bye.
Well, we only get together wedding and funerals, you know? So,
seriously,
you know,
let's not do that anymore.
No, of course not. And, you know, I'm glad that TJ, you know, added that little bit about, you know, the texting. And it is true. Sometimes, you know, it's one of the most terrible ways of communicating, I think, because it's very robotic-like. It's talking in short, you know, short codes, and it was never meant to be that kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It was really just meant, and I'm also very suspect, and I talk about this with my clients all the time. Like, where is the guy at 7 o'clock at night that he has to text you? Why can't he call you? Like, is he sleeping with somebody else at the moment? Has he got a wife? I mean, like, why can't he talk? He's not at work. Even at that,
take out the whole possibility of cheating and everything else, you know? If you are home by yourself, okay, let's just say that that's a real, that is a real scenario, that you know, he or she is out and they are home by themselves and they are curious about what you are doing. And they pick up their phone and they text you, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? And you sit there and have a text conversation back and forth for hours on end. I mean, it could literally be that long. Why does it have to be via text message? Why can't it be a phone conversation for that length of time?
That's what I'm always saying. The same thing that I'm always saying.
I mean,
is that, and because
you take the sinister aspect out of it, take the accusation of foul play, being there out of it. Because it works the same in true situations and in shady situations. If you're at home and you're on a couch and you're watching TV and you are curious about somebody that you are interested in, why don't you shut the TV down and pick up the phone and hear the sound of their voice and hear them laugh and engage in a conversation?
Exactly.
You know?
Because soulmates and relationships, did you know the voice has a DNA that goes into us and it registers to us? So that's the same reason why you can have a really nasty fight with someone if you're not face-to-face looking in their eyes and you're not hearing their voice. So, I mean, you would think you would want to hear that person's voice. I mean, isn't it one of the first things, you recognize about a soulmate is that their voice, you love their voice, you love the tinder of it, you love it, you want to hear it. It's romantic. So I think we've gotten so dehumanized with things. And, this whole – and it allows for people to, disappear because they've never been, in the relationship. They never called you. It was always texting. So all of a sudden when they want to disappear, they just block you from messaging. And now you can't even text me because you're not going to be able to do that. So I just think it's really gotten people to be able to behave in a way that they just would not behave face-to-face. And, it is a frightening, it is a little frightening to hear some of the ways people are responding to each other in text. So I think we're going to put that as our rule. Texting is not a form of communication in terms of love affairs. try not to do that too much.
Here's an interesting statistic for you, okay? Because the first phone that was able to send a text message was created actually in 1994 or 95. And at the time, maybe the average user would send, a cumulative of half a text message a month. And when the keyboard phones finally started coming out later on, I think in like 1997 or 98, that's when texting started to become more popular. Does anybody find it odd that in 1990, the divorce rate was 8%. In 1995, it was about 10%. And fast forward to 2016, as of 2016, almost half of married people will wind up in divorce.
And it seems that
lack of communication and lack of being able to have an emotional attachment to your partner because everything has become so automated and inhuman, do you think at all that that has anything to do with it?
I'm sure. And funny enough, today popped up a year, like 6 years ago today, we had done a show on that we're more electronically connected, but yet we don't communicate well. That was our show.
Wow, that's so awesome.
I forgot we actually did that. And it popped up today on Facebook, the memory from 6 years ago. And, we were already thinking about this. We sort of saw the future, that this all this, you know, connecting isn't really connecting us. It's, you know, it's short-term means of communication. It's almost like a Morse code kind of thing, you know. Like, let's just say one little thing and it's, you know, this me. I don't know what you mean by that. So I think, you know, people use, you know, texting more. You know, I find I use it in a different way. I use it business-wise, and it's funny. I never used to use it for business, but I don't actually like to get on the phone with people to book readings and things like that because they keep me on the phone too long, and if they don't email me, then I'll first try to text because I'd rather just not communicate before. I don't want to spend a half an hour on the phone. I want to do it very quickly. I want to do it very briefly. I find it very business and efficient, but I use it also, you know, sometimes to avoid talking too much to people. So can you see, sometimes people must be using even relationships. I don't really want to talk to you. Okay?
Yeah.
So,
two of the common mistakes that I think that people make is, A, they don't talk enough. And because they don't talk enough, you know, you can be physically attracted to somebody, but, you know, there's an old saying, and I don't remember who it is, but there's a saying out there that says, that, you know, don't marry, I guess, you know, somebody that you're only attracted to. Marry somebody that you can talk to because, you know, when the two of you are 80 and the sex is gone and the looks are gone, you better have something in common. And I think that at this stage, because we are so like everything with the email and the text messaging and everything is so automated and you know, almost done for you, that the maintenance on the relationship is not getting done. People don't, you know, they lose the ability to speak to one another. You know, I mean, I have been in rooms with people where everybody's on their phone and we're all sitting there, we're showing each other stupid videos and we're, you know, we're talking about some things, you know, and then all of a sudden the conversation dies down and everybody is still looking down on their phones. Like, why are we on the phone and then talking about things that are going on elsewhere instead of enjoying the time that we have right in front of us? You know, and that happens with relationships now a lot, and I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, and it's because you don't put a limit on it. Now, texting, as wonderful as it is, does have its place. If you need to shoot off a quick message, hey, can you pick up milk? Hey, I'm going to be late. Can't talk now. I'm in the middle of something. Things of that nature, then that's fine. But you need to have you can utilize the technology and still put boundaries on it, and that's where we fail. When it comes to our relationships, whether it be it platonic or romantic, that's where we fail because these wonderful things are at our access and we do not know how to properly filter them. We do not know how to establish healthy boundaries for their usage. For business purposes, it works. For something quick where you just don't have time or you're multitasking and you need to say, listen, I need 5 minutes before I can get on the phone, it is fine. But to sit here and have in-depth conversation via text message, it is inappropriate and it's not the place for it.
And it's also, it's funny because my nephew is profoundly deaf. He didn't start out deaf. It was a progressive disease. And he's living in a time that's actually perfect for him because he can email and text people. It is perfect for a man who is deaf. But it would not be his first choice of communication if he were not deaf. And so it seems funny that we're all communicating like we're deaf. Like, I can't hear you, so you can't talk. So,
and what's ironic about that, I'm sure that if you had a deaf person, and not that I'm implying that deaf people, you know, don't have a community of their own and a place where they can communicate, where everybody even desires to be hearing, because I know that there are some deaf people that are very, very comfortable with their situation. You know, so I don't want to imply that at all.
Right, exactly.
But I highly doubt that even deaf people who are okay and who are proud that they are deaf and part of the deaf community, I highly doubt that text messaging takes the place of human contact.
And it's funny, they use their sign language. They communicate
people
with their sign language and look in their eyes. They have to look in the eyes. And I remember always being impressed with
my... And they have to make facial expressions. Look at ASL. I know this because ASL, people think that it's very, very easy. You know what? You look in a dictionary, you know the sign, and that's it. But ASL is a lot more complicated than that. It's got its own grammatical structure. It's got its own sentence structure. And when I wanted to learn ASL, I'm actually going to wind up taking a class in it in January just because I'm curious. But when I got a couple of textbooks outlining ASL, you know, it has the hand signs. It has hand positioning. So a word changes with where it's, you know, with the position of the sign with relation to your body. And also it tells you to make certain facial expressions. So in order for a deaf person to communicate, they have to look at each other. They have to express emotion. Could you, and here we are fortunate to be hearing. We are fortunate to not, you know, be shoved into a world that is just not prepared, you know, because a lot of places, although deaf people get around and they can communicate, not every place is going to be deaf friendly. You know, there are certain limitations, unfortunately, with our society, you know, which puts them in some circumstances at a disadvantage, you know, and they're deaf people living in a hearing world, and that sucks for them, you know, and here we are hearing people, and we're behaving as if we're completely isolated and closed off, and it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
Exactly, and it's, you know, it's interesting to watch, you know, my nephew when he is with his significant other, because when they communicate, they do have to look at each other because of the communication with the sign language. And although he, you know, they do talk and he reads your lips, but they have to look at people to read lips. You have to look at them, and oftentimes she will look directly in his eyes to talk to him, to get him to, you know, to hear and to get the message. So, you know, maybe we should all, you know, think about that. You know, we can learn to communicate by looking at each other, keeping it a little bit, you know, a little more let's see face-to-face conversations, because it really is a dying art. And you're right, because when people are in a room together, they're always, you know, looking at their phones all the time and, you know, forgetting how to communicate to each other in a meaningful way. And, you know, yes, we're lucky, we're connected more than ever, but you know, yep. I love that, you know, our show is about communicating. It's about communicating. And, you know, it makes me so happy that you're a person who's learned how to communicate so well.
It's not even about communicating. Because texting is communicating. It is about effective communication. And there is a difference between effective communication and just communicating. You know, communicating is a poor substitute for effective communication. And there are people that study this. Body language is extremely important when you're determining who somebody is. Inflection in their voice, their eye contact, their body positioning, their overall being, whether or not they are at ease or not at ease. This all helps you identify who somebody is. Okay, there are studies upon studies upon studies with these things. And the bottom line is, and the reason why people are so fed up with the dating world and an electronic world, is they are reading these messages. They have no idea who these people really are, because texting is not a substitute for effectively communicating. They are just communicating, and it is at the base level of communication.
Exactly. And, you know, we do have some callers, and if they do want to talk to us, what do they have to do? Because nobody's pressing one today, so they do have to press one. One.
Tuesday, to say something.
If you want to talk to us, you do have to press one, because otherwise we'll just think that you just want to listen. And we would love if you have a question to call in. I'm also, you know, posting on Facebook now if anybody would like to have a question. We're right here ready and live tonight. So, you know, call in, you know. You know, so really call in and speak to us today. First of all, we're doing a lot of stuff about love and relationships on the show all the time. And it's a good time when we don't have people that want to talk or ask us something, then you know, there's always topics about love that we can explore because, you know, we used to do that all the time on the shows. Do you remember? Like, we would just pick a topic and, you know, we would start to discuss it as we did with the texting right now. But we always came up with topics of, you know, concern for people. And, you know, as far as, you know, relationships going and making them work, I see more and more in the 20 years that I've been doing this, more and more people having trouble with their relationships, trouble making them work, and, you know, trying to give people tools. But what I've found is that commitment phobia that was a problem 10 and 15, 20 years ago is now a monster problem, commitment phobia, that people are just not committing. I mean, all day long, these women, you know, they're with a guy and, you know, they connect for a few months and then they sleep with the guy and then he doesn't return their calls or he doesn't. And it's not because they didn't have a great time, a great connection. It's just that they get scared and run away. But, you know, I think commitment phobia has really gotten over the charts lately, over the charts, you know, and off the charts. And, you know, it's something that I know you were a little bit of afraid of commitment when I first met you. I think you were like a closet commitment phobic. You wanted love, but you were chasing after someone who was not committing to you. And
I was partially a phobia, and then for a while there I was an outright commitment phobic, and then I got over my shit. I lied about it for a little while. I was in that denial stage. I went, oh, no, not me. And then I went, oh, yeah, maybe that's me. And then I was proud of it. I was like, I'm commitment phobic, and I'm not going for that. And then, you know, I kind of grew up a little bit. And actually, what's funny is that, you know, when we started talking, you know, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about how we used to do this and how great it was, you know, that we could actually discuss topics and, you know, people could listen and they can hear insights on certain things if they didn't want to talk and they didn't want a reading or anything like that. And, you know, you could, you know, part of the whole Grant Me a Higher Love thing here was that, you know, when we used to discuss those topics and we used to bring those things up, like, and I know that I've said this before on the show over the course of the 8 years that we've been doing it, is that if you listen to my earlier shows, I am bitter. I am a bitch in those early shows. I'm sure that I could probably even make myself blush from my attitude back then when I was just in a different place in my life. And I think that if, you know, if anything says that the principles of Grant Me a Higher Love work, is that if you do listen to the archives and you do listen to some of my earlier shows, not even so much you from the psychic and the medium standpoint, but if you listen to just me in those earlier shows, you know, in the first 1, 2, 3 years that I was doing it, it was, you know, it really, really was. I was a completely different person. And you actually saw me go through the steps that you discussed in the book, and you know, you called me out on my stuff. So while I was going through this journey on Grant Me a Higher Love, the radio show, I was also going through the journey and the self work in Grant Me a Higher Love, the book. You know, and now I'm in a fantastic relationship. Who would have thought 8 years ago that I would be married today and that I would be happily married at that? You know, I mean, I was far from the marrying type at that point. I wanted it, like I was avoiding it at every cost. You know, and you know what, the principles that you wrote about in Grant Me a Higher Love are the things that got me through that and got me through to the stage where I can have a functional, committed, you know, healthy relationship. You know, so if anything says that it works, I do, you know, and you can go back into the archives and see for yourself.
And I remember when we started the show, I was clear to point out that our listeners would go on a journey with you. It almost was our own reality show. It would be, you're going to follow her and watch her go through the principles, learn them. You're going to watch what happens to her. So really, we've been a reality show. That in eight years, you have grown from a person who was kind of jaded and not really happy with your life and your love life to someone who's grown into herself, who's come to know who she is, and who has embraced and grown up through it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even in the beginning, of, you know, the whole thing. People would say, why aren't you picking other experts to talk with you on the show? I said, I don't want the experts. I want to be, I want someone who's read the book, gets it, kind of, and loves the book, wants to walk the walk, you know, not just talk the talk, and is in saying, hey, I'll be your, like, experiment. I'll be someone who believes in this philosophy, and let me see if it works, and let me go along with it. And again, I can't stress enough, just saying the words, grant me a higher love. And I'll give you an example of today. There was a woman who wanted a reading. And, you know, there's about a six-week wait. That's the way it is. And she said she was reading, grant me a higher love, and that's why she wanted a reading. And I said, well, it's good because you need to, you know, read the book before you're reading, and things will play out. And she has some commitment issues, this woman. And, you know, I read her today, and oddly enough, within a week before her reading, she's put into connection with two men who are potential soulmates, definitely, and one who's sort of been ghosting her now, got scared, and another one who she said, well, he's coming on kind of strong, and I'm like, okay, so you got one who doesn't want to commit to you and running away and ghosting you. Now you got someone who knows you're a good thing, and you're scared. Can you see what the universe is giving her a choice? Well, you can go chase after Mr. who doesn't want to commit for the next decade, who will come and go as he please, or you can embrace the one that I believe her dead mother brought her way, and the mother gave her a very clear sign as to why this was the one she picked, because the guy actually collected, he's a collector of some sort, and I won't say too many details because it should be private, but happens to know who her father is because they collect the same things, and they've met before. So, think only the mother could have done that. And so I said, it's your choice. The universe, you know, you picked up the book, Grant Me a Higher Love, 6 weeks ago. And I said, anybody who reads that and starts saying that, you know, you'll be granted one. It'll happen. It'll happen really quickly. And now you can see she has her own commitment issues. And what you're going to learn from that is soulmate love without commitment is pain. So how many soulmates do you want brought into your alignment? I said to her, where you can't commit. I said, you're not responsible for Mr. Number One, who you have this phenomenal connection and now decides he's not going to answer your texts, as we talked about the text, who's going to run away. You know, you can keep getting that kind of love, or you can get a guy who was married already. His wife died tragically 10 years ago. He loved being married and a man who knew how to commit. You can get a guy like that whose dead wife is bringing you in alignment with him, and your mom likes him, and you can get a guy who knows how to commit because he knows what a soulmate is, and when he finds one, he's going to pursue it. Or you can don't blame it on the universe if you screw this one up. You're not responsible for the man who ghosts you. You're not responsible for his behavior, but you're responsible if you're running from a guy who says, let's see what's here. So, you know, what I've learned is, you know, in examining people is if they have their own commitment issues oftentimes, and whether they're subconscious ones or they're classic commitment phobic thing, they don't want love, or they've been hurt and now they're afraid, or they're the committed commitment phobics. They're married to someone they never loved all that much. And, you know, they're not fooling me about commitment. So it's one of the things that we had to get you through some commitment issues. We had to, you know, get you to recognize who you were and what you wanted. And mostly it was opening your heart to love. Remember, we worked on a lot of that in our earlier shows. How do we open our heart to love? Do you remember that? We used to talk about that a lot.
Yep, I do.
And opening our hearts to love. And I'll always tell people, you have to embrace the love that's in front of you right now. There's plenty of love, even if you don't have a romantic relationship. You know, even if most of your significant family members have passed away and you feel like, God, there's nobody really left on that I have, you know. You do have friends and you can be loving to your friends. And, you know, how about to a dog, a cat, you know, how about to children that are in your life? How about to, you know, a stranger? How about, you know, talking to the person in the line in front of you who might want to communicate to you? So these are really things that we can do to open our hearts. Now, we do have a couple of people that have come on to listen, and I did post on my Facebook page, and I did, you know, and why good people can't leave bad relationships has almost 30,000 people. So I'm wondering if any of these would like to talk to us. If you press 1, you can talk
to
us.
We know that you want to speak to us. I think everybody is just enjoying the fact that you and I are having a conversation with them.
About love. So, okay, so good.
What?
Because if they want to talk to us now, opening our heart to love is what, and I did an experiment on this because I'd read a book years ago about, you know, opening your heart chakra, opening yourself to love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would practice it. I'd say, well, they said if you would send love from your heart chakra and you would just, you know, be open in your heart, people would catch it. So I would just, like, sit by myself in, say, the library, and I would kind of send love over to, say, an old lady sitting at the other end of the library, all alone, looking very sad, and probably going to the library to find companionship in books, because books are very soulful. They're written from the soul and the heart. And lo and behold, within 5 minutes of me sending, the woman would walk over to me and just give me a big smile and say hello. And I would say, she received the message.
Yep.
So, you know, practicing that opening of your heart chakra, giving love wherever you go, being that invitation to love, you know, the greatest invitation to be loved is to love first. So, you know, it's giving that. Are there ways that you practice, like, opening your heart? Do you do things?
Well, yeah. No. Back then when I was, you know, amidst my transformation, obviously, yes. You know, I mean, I had to set up goals for myself. But the first thing that I had to do in order to open that up, and this is something that I think everybody has to do, is you need to identify why exactly your commitment is public in the first place. And you need to face it, and you need to come to terms with whatever that is. It's kind of like the same premise of when you're angry, you know, and you lash out at somebody that has nothing to do with it, you know, like, so if I'm, like, mad at you, Cindy, and you ask me to do something last minute, and I yell at you because you're asking me last minute, you know, usually there's an underlying reason, and there's an underlying, you know, anger that is festering there, and it's causing me to lash out over something that is very, very small. And I think that everybody needs to really, really look at themselves in an objective light and say to themselves that, you know, they're going to be imperfect, and that's okay. But they need to figure out what their underlying cause is as far as why they're like that. And for me, you know, I think that I was just, you know, in a position, you know, I think that I was just basically in a position where I was just not really happy with myself. I was not really happy, you know, with who I was at the time. And it was easier to kind of stay with, you know, what I knew than starting over, because at that point I felt that if I did have to start all over, that, you know, who would want me at that point, you know? And I stayed way, way too long, and I made every excuse in the book to stay too long, you know? And it wasn't until I figured out, okay, well, listen, where is this really coming from? And I identified the things, you know, from my own past that were causing it. And then I faced them, and I had conversations, and I spoke to people about it. And finally, I got to myself to a position where I said, you know what, I'm worth loving, and I'm going to have no problem finding somebody else, and I'm going to have no problem being with the right person, and I want the right person, and I'm going to take the chance on the right person, and I'm going to be bold and adventurous and go on a new adventure. And once I did those things, you know, everything kind of fell into alignment with me. You know, I didn't rely, you know, social media in the very, very beginning of my relationship with my wife played a good part, because that's how we first got into contact. But even though that was the first thing that we did, was we texted for several hours while we were both at work, what we did was we met up for coffee later on. I was not going to allow the text messaging to be my form of communication. You know, even then, and it was only 5 years ago, even then, digital communication is not real communication for me. It is necessary to have real communication, which is, unfortunately, as we said before, a dying skill set, you know. And all of a sudden, when people start talking about they want more and they want commitment and they want this, when you're not speaking to the person that you're with, when you're using text messaging as your form of communication, how do you look somebody in the face and say, I want more? That's something that's completely alien at that point, that they're not even expecting, because who knows how to respond to that when you're face to face? You know, so not only are they not asking the important questions, but they're not reacting to the important questions either, because it's just not being done the right way. So with my wife, I did not settle for that form of communication. I used it for what it was good for, but I knew that at the core and the basic levels that we needed to get to know each other, and we needed to get to know who we are. And part of that is being in the same room, and it's interacting, and it's watching TV together, and it's talking on the phone, and it's a number of other things, not just having a text conversation.
Exactly. And, you know, what we're always talking, that the world needs us to communicate better. And I call it, oftentimes why we don't communicate is because, you know, there's always a pink elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. It's the real issue. So we distract from real issues. We distract by drugs or alcohol, watching too much TV, spending too much money, whatever we can do to distract from the issues. And when we talk to the person that we need, you know, with the person that we need to address the pink elephant in the room, we waltz around it, dance around it, and don't talk about it. And I'm a firm believer in you bring the pink elephant forward. And, yep. You know, I kick myself in the head when I don't do it now. And sometimes it'll be because I'm tiptoeing around something. And I'll give you a family issue about someone who was not invited to his own daughter's wedding, and which is something that happens quite a lot in America now. Our children are very mad at us for divorcing and all of that. And, you know, when we were together with these people and the daughter was there and this big issue was lurking in the middle of the restaurant, no one addressed it. We just all sat there very uncomfortably. And nobody said it, and I could kick myself in the head because I still say you're still that peacemaker. You want everybody to like you, and they might not like you if you rock the boat. And what I should have said is, so why aren't you inviting your father to your wedding? What's the issue here? Why don't you have the courage to tell him this instead of just, you know, we all know you're not inviting him, but nobody's saying it, and we're all uncomfortable here, and everybody knows about it. And yet nobody addressed it, including me. And so that day, and that was a few months ago, I said, you know what? I am never going to have dinner like that again. I am never going to sit like that and be saying nothing. I'm going to speak what everybody has on their mind. Because it was just this most awkward, awkward moment in time. And that's what we do when it's a big issue. We tend to just, well, I'm not going to bring it up, and I'm not going to skirt it. And I was raised by my mom, and she's was 100% Finnish. And Finnish people, you know, they're like, you never know what they're thinking. I mean, they're great people in many ways, but, you know, you don't bring up stuff. And my mother taught me, you just don't talk about stuff. Mm-mm, you just don't talk about it. So it's something I have to work against because, you know, it causes the anxiety sometimes to talk about things that are really, you know, need to talk about. But I do it anyway. I'm like, okay, I'm going to bring it up. But I think, you know, sometimes we just need to talk about things and communicate with people. So any of you, if you have a lover or a husband, and so many of my clients come because they think their partners are cheating or doing something fraudulent with money or, you know, gambling or doing drugs, and they're coming to me to ask. I'm like, you shouldn't really be asking me as a psychic. You should be asking the person. Put the cards right on the table and say, you know what, I think you're cheating on me. You know, or I think that you're doing something unethical or you're using drugs. And, the point is that people will lie. Oftentimes they lie. They look you right in the eyes and lie. And how do we, like, know what the truth is? Our gut tells us. Our gut tells us that people are lying.
here's something that I found very, very interesting. For those out there that is familiar with Quentin Tarantino's work, years ago he did a movie called The Reservoir Dogs. And this is far from a movie about love. It's actually about a bank robbery. But there is a scene in this movie that is considered, you know, a very, very brutal scene when compared with other sorts of gore. And what I find ironic about that particular scene is that, you know, and I'm not going to, I don't want to ruin the movie for anybody who hasn't seen it, but there is a scene in a movie where somebody is being tortured. And what he does, and you would think that, that because it's considered a gory scene, you would think that he showed a lot of blood and guts and, you know, whatever. But what it actually turns out to be was, you know, you see the person that's doing the torturing walk up to the person, and then the camera pans over and stares at a wall. And all you hear is what's going on the side. And it's not even over, you know, it's not even a lot. It's just, you know, like stuff like that. It's not even a lot. It's not even blood curdling like that, you know, that Janet Leigh Psycho sort of thing. It was just, you know, screams, and you knew what was happening. But this is considered a very, very gory portion, part of the movie. And it's considered one of the harder scenes to watch simply because what Tarantino did was he said, I'm going to plant the seed, and your brain is going to take you into that dark place. And everybody followed suit with that because everybody agrees that this is a very, very hard scene to watch, even though we're only staring at a wall. When there is lack of communication within people and you are making the assumption and you are going on what you believe to be, you know, fact, what you believe to be your gut, you know, when you're sitting there and you're allowing your imagination to run away with you instead of just openly confronting somebody and asking the right questions because you're too scared of what that answer is going to be. Your mind will create something that is so probably off and that is possibly so much worse than it actually is. And your behavior and your treatment of that person will inherently change. You will think the worst. You will treat them as if they're doing something. And what if they're not? You're sabotaging your own relationship. Because you're not asking the right questions, because for you it's easier to draw the conclusion in your mind and tell yourself that you know the answer versus just asking for the answer. And the difference between asking for the answer and knowing the answer is that if you ask and they lie about it, your gut will then kick in and tell you, listen, your instincts here are correct. But if you ask them and you look at them in the face and you know when they're lying and you know when they're telling the truth, everybody's always so quick to go, what if on the bad side? What if on the good side? What if we are ruining our relationships just because we have a lack of communication in them?
Right. We're not asking. We're not talking about what we need. We're not saying, I need this or I need that. I mean, oftentimes I see couples as a relationship coach. The relationships fell apart because nobody said what they needed or wanted.
Yep.
They didn't address that there was something wrong or that they weren't happy or that they were feeling neglected. They just let
people thinking that they're telepathic when they're not.
No, and that's what I'm always telling people. People are not mind readers. And the one thing that drives me crazy is when I ask a woman, you know, she's with a guy for like 6 months, well, are you exclusive? And well, it's implied. I go, that's not good enough. You're not implied.
Yeah.
You have the talk. You have the talk that says, well, you know what? You don't sleep with people or sleeping with other people. I don't do that. So, you know, and you have to, like, state it. You can't just imply it, you know, because you might think you're – and I always say to the woman, well, you think it's exclusive, but I don't think he does. And when they finally get it out in the open, they realize that he hasn't been exclusive. And he's saying, well, we never really said it. We never said anything about it. We never talked about it. So I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. So, again, that's – making assumptions without communicating, without saying. And I just see more and more, for some reason, people are more and more not saying the things that need to be said in a relationship or clarifying things or stating what they need and want. And that's what, you know, we're here to, like, tell people, communicate, ask, talk. If you have something that your partner is doing that you don't want them to do or that bothers you, then you need to address it. You can't just pretend it's going to go away. I mean, so many people just think it'll go away.
I do that all the time.
Go in the denial mode. Okay, I'm just going to deny there's an issue. And, you know, maybe like snow, it'll melt when the spring comes and I won't have to deal with it. I don't have to get the shovel out. But for the most part, you know, things don't disappear. Trouble tends to multiply.
I kid you not, Cindy, I do that all the time, you know, because, I mean, obviously me and my wife have a great relationship, and I always say how we don't fight, but it doesn't mean that every so often we don't grind on each other's nerves. I mean, we are people, and, you know, we are normal people. And, you know, and I do that all, like, when something's bothering me, like, I'll let it go for, like, a little bit, and then when I see that it's an ongoing trend, I call her out on that shit, and she calls me out on that shit. Like, she does this one thing where I literally, because, like, I'll be, like, sitting around watching. What do you want to watch? I don't know. What do you want to watch? I don't know. You know, so I'll start going through. She'll say, pick something. And I'll start going through. And I'll go, oh. And I'll put something on, and I'll lay the remote down. And she'll look at me, and she'll go, are you watching this? I just put it on. So, yes, I'm watching this. And she goes, oh. And I'll go, okay. I'm like, if you don't want to watch this, we can watch something else. Here, you pick something. And she'll start going through the stations, and then she'll start going, well, what do you want to watch? So finally I looked at her one day, and I went, Lisa, I was watching what I wanted to watch. You asked me to change it. So now you put on something that you want to watch, and we'll see if we agree, you know? But that's something that in a stressed relationship, that's something that can turn into a fight. And I've seen that happen with my friends where, you know, well, where they'll get like so testy about something that small, you know, because the relationship is stressed out in other areas. But that's something that I don't even give myself the opportunity to get stressed out about it. I'll just flat out call her out on that. Like, listen, it drives me crazy when you do this. Can we not do that anymore? And she does the same thing to me, you know, all the time. You know, like, listen, this is kind of grinding on me. And we make the effort to not do those things. And that's why we don't fight.
Right.
You know?
And again,
so,
it's communicating. It's saying. It's asking. It's talking. It's like sometimes you could just say it with a sense of humor. People will hear you. But, you know, relationships, what the worst part is that people just start living in a house and they're not communicating for a decade, and they're actually strangers by the time a 10-year period is up. They don't know the first clue. They think they know everything about their partner. That's what cracks me up. And if anything, never assume you know everything about your partner. And don't assume they haven't changed and grown and evolved. So just because you've been with somebody for a long time doesn't mean they haven't changed profoundly, doesn't mean things aren't going on in them. And the more couples stay in a household without talking, I guarantee the more they're both changing. Okay, the more that's going on. Yeah, they're the last
to know. And now, if you think about it this way, you have people who are living in the same house. They're not effectively communicating. They're very much living separate lives. Their faces are likely in their phones or in the computer and things like that. And now what do we have on the computer? We have social media. We have online dating. And when you're in a house under those circumstances, the lack of communication, whether you realize it or not, is extremely stressful on the relationship, you know, because you're constantly guessing and second guessing, and you think you know it all. And when you think that you know it all, your relationship can become very, very monotonous, and it can become very, very boring. So what will people naturally do? Well, they'll go to social media, they'll do this, they'll do that. And it's very, very difficult to think of your life with someone if you think that someone better is simply a click away, you know? So we're creating our own monsters, because instead of enjoying the people that we have, and instead of making sure that we're still compatible with the people that we have, we begin looking at, you know, around the country, around the state, around town, whatever, you know, everywhere else that you can find them. We start communicating with them, even though it's a cold form of communication, but you wind up saying more to these outside people than you do in your own homes.
Exactly.
You know, so we're creating our own monsters. We're creating our own problems, again, because a conversation to do.
Right, and that's what, you know, ultimately, you know, if you're in a relationship, you should work on talking to each other. Again, that don't assume you know everything about your partner. You know, don't assume that nothing's going on. But you ask them if something's wrong or what's going on, and they say nothing, and your gut tells you there's something. Ask again, probe again.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're here to teach you that. And, you know, it's so funny today because we had plenty of listeners. Nobody wanted to talk, and you could know what I said today before the radio show. I said, dear God, I have done nothing but readings for the last couple of weeks, and I don't know if I could go into deep channeling tonight because my head hurts from it. Not literally a headache, but it's almost like after you run a marathon for like 26 miles and somebody asks you to run another mile, I was like, I don't know if I have that other mile in me. So today I think God gave us a gift, which was let's go back to what the show used to be about, talking about love, what we've learned, what we do, and our listeners all stayed and listened to us. So I'm very proud of that, and I think it was a little gift from God for me.
You know? Yeah.
So, and it's a very good setup for next week's show, which we're going to remind people is going to be about dating and dating tips and how you can meet people, and it's going to be just fascinating. So,
absolutely.
I'm looking
and Cindy,
very.
We are at the end of our show already.
Oh, yes, we're at the end of the show, so we're going to say goodnight to everybody, and thank you for joining us, and we will speak next week with our special matchmaking show, and I'm looking so forward to that. Good night, everybody. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Cindy. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week, guys.
Good night now.